sometime. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Love KBOO Community Radio and its mission? Step up and apply to join the board of directors. KBOO's board leads the station, shaping its future, representing member voices, safeguarding its financial health, and sustaining the independence of community radio. Every KBOO member can run for the board, and we especially encourage BIPOC members to apply. Want to learn more? Join an upcoming board information session held online via video conference from now through June. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/recruitment26.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from McMenamins, presenting Heated Rivalry, a Jockstar rave with DJs Gregory Dillon and Michael Modrano at the Crystal Ballroom on Friday, April 3rd. Tickets and info at crystalballroompdx.com.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns. Today, we're talking with Rachel Crandall Crocker, the founder of Trans Day of Visibility, and we're doing this broadcast today on Trans Day of Visibility. So this is a very special day, and we're talking to a very special person at a time when there's so much such a concerted effort to try to diminish the really bright spirit of our vibrant transgender community. Here is Rachel Crandall Crocker, who is a symbol of the exact opposite of what the Republican Party is trying to do right now in this country. So, Rachel, welcome to Transpositive.
Thank you.
So, Rachel, tell us, first of all, what is Trans Day of Visibility for folks who are listening on the radio right now? Maybe they're not transgender. They may not know anything about transgender people. What is Trans Day of Visibility?
It is a day that transgender people from all over the world can come and celebrate being trans. It's really depressing out there now, and the Day of Visibility is one day where we can celebrate, in which we could be ourselves, and we could do it all together, all the way around the world.
That's so great, Rachel. So it's a day to celebrate being transgender. That seems like a simple enough idea, but it, somehow it turned into an international phenomena. So there must be something to it.
It did. Originally, I was hoping that a few people would like it. I never guessed that maybe a few million people would like it.
When you started it, did you just start it like for your own community? I know that you're a leader in Michigan in the transgender community there. Was it originally something that you just thought of like for your own Michigan transgender community, or were you hoping it would be an international day?
I was hoping it would be international. However, I was hoping that maybe a few people in Windsor would like it. Windsor is real close to Detroit. However, I contacted trans leaders from all the way around the world, and I asked them if they were interested, and a lot said no. However, a few said yes, and I started it on Facebook, and that's how it all happened.
Oh, that's great. So we've been joined by another co-host, Nicolette. Welcome back. Nicolette is a regular co-host of Transpositive. We're talking right now with Rachel Crandall Crocker, the founder of Trans Day of Visibility. So Nicolette, would you like to ask a question or introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Nicolette. My pronouns are they, them. I hope I haven't missed too much. I was going to ask, well, first of all, Rachel, can you tell us a little bit about who you are?
I am the executive director of Transgender Michigan, and I'm also a therapist, and I am the founder of the International Transgender Day of Visibility. I am disabled. I have Tourette's syndrome. However, it never stopped me from doing anything. It never even stopped me from changing the world like I'm doing right now.
Great. Yeah, I also have Tourette's. So great to see another Tourette-er on here. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And I am so glad that you started TDEV. I mean, I think this day is so amazing. Can you tell us a little more about like when and how and why, I guess, you founded TDEV? Like, what was your intention behind it?
I wanted a day that we could come together all the way around the world and to celebrate being trans. Up until then, the only trans day was the Day of Remembrance, and that's when we remember our dead. Well, I wanted a day that we could celebrate our alive, and that's exactly why I started it.
That's awesome. Great. Yeah. Sorry, did you want to ask something, Emma?
No, go ahead, Nicolette, please.
Yeah. Let's see, pulling up my notes here. Sorry. So was there any special reason you picked March 31st?
It was enough away from the Day of Remembrance and enough before Pride.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's how I picked it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you feel like with our current political climate, with all this constant attack on trans rights lately, do you think that visibility in TDEV is more important now than ever?
Yes, I really do. Yeah. It's important that we have a time that we could be happy. It's important that we have a time that we could all be happy and that we could be away from all the negative things happening in Washington.
Agreed. So, can I ask, what does visibility mean to you and why is it so important?
It means just being myself and not being afraid to show it. I went through a lot of my life trying to run away from it. And Visibility Day is a part of me saying, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to be me and I'm going to show it.
I love that. I love that. And I think that's amazing, which reminds me, can you tell us a little bit about your trans journey?
I always knew I was actually a girl. When I was 8, I tried to come out to my mom and dad, and it went awful. They told me that it was the dirtiest thing in the world. So I went back in the closet, and I came out again when I was in my 30s. And I lost everything. I lost my marriage. I lost my house. I lost my job. However, I gained my freedom. And believe it or not, it was worthwhile.
Yeah, that sounds worthwhile. Thank you for sharing your story. Let's see, Rachel, I think you mentioned you were the executive director of, what was it, Transgender Michigan?
Yes.
Yeah, can you tell us about that?
After I came out, I lost everything, and I had no meaning in my life. So I thought about, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I thought, I want to do something to make it so what happened to me does not have to happen to everyone else. And that turned out to be Transgender Michigan.
Yeah, that's so inspiring. So what exactly do you do in Transgender Michigan? Like, what do you do and what's your purpose?
We have a website that has all kinds of information, and we have our trans pages with a listing of transgender doctors, therapists, dentists, a lot of stuff. And we also have a helpline. It was the first transgender helpline in the world. And we have a speakers bureau. We have job fairs and health fairs. And in the summer, we have our transgender pride in the park. And last summer, we had a few hundred people show up for that.
That's amazing. And thank you so much for the work that you do.
Sure.
So we've just been joined by Sheila, another one of our co-hosts. Sheila, welcome back to Transpositive.
Thank you.
All right, no
problem. I lived in Detroit also at one time. There was a gender program. I think it was a Dr. Nicolini. Is that ringing a bell?
Dr. Nicolini. It
uh-huh.
doesn't ring a bell to me. There were a number of doctors, but I don't recognize that name.
He had a support group and a referral service. I don't think he did the surgeries, but I attended some of the meetings. There were only about seven people there, and in those days, they'd scared everybody because they said, well, don't, you know, warning dangers of hormones and dangers of this and dangers of that, and it almost looked as though he was angry that we'd even showed up for the meeting. And
really?
But it,
wow.
Yeah, it was, but that might have been just my impression at the time. But I remember meeting a trans person there who had had her top surgery done, and she explained how she had, her family would no longer speak to her, and the hardest part for her was that her children that, you know, that she loved were now forbidden to see her. And this was my introduction to being a trans person, was to hear this terribly sad story from obviously a very sweet person. So we've come a long way, I hope, since then, but it just shows how this idea of disability, why it's all so important in many ways, to at least to be visible to our people who love us, but sometimes that visibility is the source of our rejection also. So maybe I can interject that and just...
And unfortunately, a part of being ourselves, there always is a drawback. However, for me, it's worth it. And I'm real happy I'm me.
Yeah, you mentioned that when you came out, Rachel, you lost your marriage, you lost your job, you lost your housing, but you found your freedom.
Right.
So you had a pretty big price to pay just for choosing to be yourself.
I did. However, it all turned out well.
It really
My
did.
Life right now is wonderful.
Oh, that's great. Can you tell us some of the things that make your life wonderful now?
Well, I'm married to another trans woman. And she makes my life wonderful. And I'm a therapist. And my clients are really rewarding. And I'm so happy in my life.
That's so great. And you're internationally famous, too.
Yes, I am now. It's really weird. It's really weird. It's almost surreal.
But it sounds like you haven't let it get to your head. It sounds like you're very, in spite of the fact that you're internationally famous, that you are able to just live an ordinary life.
Yes. That's exactly what I want.
That's so nice. That's kind of what we want for everybody. That's part of why we have an International Transgender Day of Visibility, because we're trying to let everybody know that we're just normal people who just are living normal, happy lives.
Exactly.
And we're actually, we're something to celebrate, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So where are some of the Transgender Day, visibility events happening this year, like, that you're aware of? Like, are there, like, one or two really big events that, that you'd like to let us know about that, that are going on around the world?
Well, I know that last year it was all over. It was even in Ireland. It was in Africa. And it was even in Israel.
And what are you supposed to do on Transgender Day of Visibility? Like, I mean, are you supposed to, like, have a parade or you know, have speeches? How are you supposed to celebrate it?
I want people to do what they want. It isn't like I have a lot of rules. Some people have symposiums. Some people have get together at coffee shops. Here in Michigan, we had a rally at the Capitol in Lansing. And tomorrow we're having an open mic.
Oh, great. So people can come and talk about, they can talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Right, right. Or they could read a poem, or they could play some music. It's really up to them.
Oh, gosh, that's so creative. That's so great. Like, can you think of one maybe example of, like, one of the most creative ways that you've seen people celebrate Trans Day of Visibility over the years?
Well, I know someone who had a ribbon-wearing campaign. They wore a ribbon, and if people would ask them why, they would tell them all about Visibility Day.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
If we were, like, for somebody who doesn't know about Trans Day of Visibility, what would you tell them is so great about being transgender? Why is being transgender something to celebrate?
Well, I celebrate being who I am. And that's the most important part. I had to hide who I was for so much of my life, and now I get to celebrate just being me.
Oh, that's great. Has anybody ever written a book about your life or written a book about Trans Day of Visibility? Is there any kind of media that's ever been produced about it?
There is someone who is working on it now. However, it won't happen any time soon. However, I am interested in the possibility of that.
Yeah, that would be a really great thing. Can you tell me, Rachel, what is the state of transgender rights right now in your home state of Michigan? Are there any attacks on transgender rights? And are there people fighting back?
There are attacks. Our legislators keep on trying to pass attacks. However, we are also fighting back. We work with an organization called Equality Michigan, and we also work with the ACLU. And so we really are fighting back, and I'm going to continue fighting back.
Oh, that's great. So one of the things that you said earlier in the interview when we were talking was you mentioned that when you were a kid, you knew that you already knew you were transgender. You knew that you were a woman, and that your parents told you that that was the dirtiest thing in the world. And so you didn't have a chance to come out until you were in your 30s.
Right.
Nowadays, there's a lot of trans kids that have an opportunity to come out much younger, but there's also this machine happening right now in this country trying to stop that from happening. Can you talk about why it's important to allow kids to explore and to come out when they're kids?
In a lot of our country, it's illegal to help people under 18 come out. And that's horrible.
Yeah, it sounds like in your experience, I don't know what your life was like between the time that you told your parents and they said that that was the dirtiest thing they'd ever heard, and when you came out in your 30s, I don't know if you suffered any psychological or emotional pain during that time by not getting to be your authentic self, but it sounds like being able to come out really changed your life.
It did. It really did. And I went to a therapist who helped me with all of it. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And the therapist really helped me understand I really wanted to come out. And I did come out.
And so it sounds like for a lot of those kids, I mean, there's a lot of transgender kids in the United States. I mean, there's a lot. And it sounds like for those transgender kids, that would be the best thing for them too, if they have a chance to talk to a therapist, if they have a chance to explore their gender identity. It's not like an overwhelming number of kids, but it's a significant number, and not allowing them to explore their gender identity and to come out can really cause some serious harm.
Oh, it really can. It really can. And I'm afraid that's what's happening now.
Yeah.
A lot of hospitals and universities that used to work with kids have stopped.
Yeah. So it sounds like your positive message, it sounds like your positive message, Rachel, is the kind of message that legislators need to hear. They need to hear about how it makes such a difference in the lives of transgender kids if they're able to. Yeah.
And we had a rally at the Capitol on Saturday. And that's one way that we are taking back our right to be ourselves.
Yeah.
And we're having an open mic tomorrow night.
Yeah.
What's up around me? Please go away.
Hi, this is Emma. I just want to take a break from the program for just a minute because today is a Transgender Day of Visibility, and it's a very special day. We have on a very special guest. We have Rachel Crandall Crocker, the founder of Transgender Day of Visibility. And the reason that we're able to host a program like this is because of your support for your community radio station, KBOO. KBOO is a very special station. It's a place where the voices of transgender, non-binary, gender diverse, gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer people are welcomed. KBOO is a station that welcomes and is inclusive of the gender diverse community. And it's a real gem. KBOO is someplace very special that it's hard to find something like KBOO any place in this country.
But we have it right here in Portland, Oregon. And the reason that we have it is because of your support. Your support means so much. And, you know, as somebody who has been given this tremendous privilege of hosting a show, airing the voices of transgender people for the last 10 years, I can just... I just can't tell you how much I appreciate KBOO, and I hope that you appreciate KBOO too. I hope that you'll consider giving to KBOO. If you do, you can go to kboo.fm/give, and you can also go to the website kboo.fm and click donate. So I hope you'll consider giving to KBOO today, and thanks so much for your support of community radio. So Sheila, would you like to ask Rachel a question or have some time now to do your segment?
Yes, I would. One of the things that I've noticed in the opposition, particularly to young people transitioning, as opposed to many of us who came up in a different era, is that the narrative always focuses on the therapy rather than the condition. And oftentimes they'll say, we don't have a problem with trans people existing, but what we don't like is gender dysphoria, which of course is like saying, kind of love the sinner, hate the sin, because unfortunately, exactly. The dysphoria is the presenting symptom of being transgender in the first place.
Right.
So my question, and I think all of you will understand this, is that there's so much more to transitioning than the surgical interventions, and not everyone even does surgical interventions or even hormonal interventions. And so what my own personal opinion is that transgender people, particularly young transgender people that are resistant to socialization in rigid stereotypical sex roles, in the old days, they were merely ridiculed. Today, they're being treated as dangerous or delusional, and even as the aggressor rather than the victim. So this idea of girl sports or something, and they always phrase it this way, men in women's sports or men in girls sports, implying that there's an age differential there also. And it also somewhat dishonors female to male transgender people, because it implies that either that they don't exist, or that if they do exist, they're much less threatening, because transgender qua transgender is almost like being some sort of a gender terrorist trying to sneak into spaces where you don't belong. And we assume that men are always the aggressors. And even though, so it's a paradox that even though a transgender person is saying, but I'm not a male, or at least I'm not a stereotypical male, that instead of being seen as a way of opting out of an aggressor role is seen as the proof that somehow we're lying, and that what's really going on is we're looking for the goodies, and then they go casting about trying to say, well, what is the reward? What is the reward except underemployment, underpaid wages, sexual exploitation of sex workers, all the different things we go through, and we end up being the bad guys. And so the paradox of visibility is that the more visible we become, the more we are a visible target for their fears and animosities.
Yep. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think what I conclude from all that as an older trans person is that I remember reading a book, because I read everything I could find on transgender literature because I was looking for the answers for myself, even if I didn't have a community around me to tell me what the answers were. And one of them was a study of post-operative transgender people. And the conclusion was that if there wasn't a statistical increase in, quote, general well-being, then there was really no justification for surgical intervention, forgetting that one of the reasons that there was not a general adjustment to well-being was that what was going on was that we would had still not changed society to a degree that they could accept us. So again, rather than blaming the social milieu in which we were existing, they blamed us as the perpetrators of our own unhappiness and rejection.
Right. When I came out, there really weren't any books about it yet. All that I could find was chapters in books about being gay, chapters that talked about transvestism. Mm-hmm. That's all I could find.
I remember the very first book that was sympathetic was called The Uninvited Dilemma. And to this day, I think it was remarkably insightful. Then there was a book. Yeah, then there was a book called by a paradoxically doctor comparing transsexualism and transvestism along a, I think, a 7-point scale of gender dysphoria to decide at which point a transvestite might be a transgender person or vice versa. And then there was one called In Search of Eve, which was actually another fairly intelligent response to us. And these were all the early things that kind of gave us at least a handle. But the thing that really used to irritate me was that our first coming out party, in a sense, was in the talk shows. And eventually, what drove me crazy with them is that at first it was just having a transgender panel. But later on, it was, I'm a transgender person and I'm going to tell my longtime lover I'm transgender. And then there was like transgender people who also beat their doggies and kitties. I mean, it was just they'd find some way to tweak it because they said, hey, this is a moneymaker, but how can we make this even sexier? It was just as wacky as could be.
I was asked to be on one of those shows.
Oh my! Which one? Which one do you
be on? The Jerry Springer Show.
Oh, the worst! The worst!
And I asked what it would be like, and they said I would have to end up in my underwear.
Oh no!
Oh my God!
That sounds about right.
They really said that. And I said, I don't think so. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
This is so much fun.
I mean, Jerry Springer's really all improv, basically, anyway.
we can laugh at it now, but what was amazing to me in my own response is I didn't miss one of those shows because I was so anxious to find some sort of mirroring to know that I was not alone, and it was just so interesting to see and find other people that, and of course many of them were actually drag artists also. They were, a lot of them came from the Baton Show Lounge in Chicago that still, I believe, exists, and that is a major contributor to the Miss Gay Continental pageant, which is one of the bigger trans pageants, along with Mr. and Miss Gay America. So again, we're kind of a hybrid community. We found friends where we could find them, and at which point trans and gay intersected with each other was another problematic thing. It's like, and I used to even ask my drag queen friends, I said, you know, you're so young and you're so pretty, I'm like, why aren't you doing this all the time? And they said, oh honey, we are, but just not at work, you know, or something like that, or it would be the other thing. It would be, oh, I like it, but once the runway is over and I've had about 5 drinks, I'm ready to get this crap off and just sit there and resume my life, you know. That was what I used to hear.
Right.
And I was like, well, why don't you at least teach us your makeup skills before you go?
Earlier you mentioned Dr. Doctor, and I actually know him. or I
oh,
did.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, wow.
I met him at a transgender convention. And he's actually a nice guy.
Well, his book was really insightful at the time because it was yes. It was an effort to give some respectability to the way we were treated, because another narrative that came out was that what we were was schizophrenic people who manifested our schizophrenia by having a fixed delusion that we were members of the opposite sex.
Right. I remember that. Oy.
There's a lot of people who seem to think that's still the case now. We know it's not, but you know,
right.
Those people refuse to educate themselves.
That's why I have Visibility Day. I want people just to see me doing regular things. If I have a trans agenda, it's waking up in the morning, brushing my teeth, and flossing and having breakfast. That's what my agenda is.
Oh, flossing, yeah, that's...
So, I want people just to see us as normal.
Well, our response has been twofold. One is to prove in our visibility how really that transgender does not reduce us to being only transgender. And the second one is to go more in their face. And I was going to laugh and say, when they say you're schizophrenic, I'd do my Betty Davis thing and I'd say, yeah, but I am schizophrenic. So what? Fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
So, Rachel, what do you see as the future of transgender visibility? Do you think that in the future we'll become very normalized and that it won't be such a big deal to be transgender?
I think so. I really do. I'm optimistic on that.
Yeah, you seem like a very optimistic person.
I work at it, yeah. I'm optimistic, and I like to focus on what I'm doing about what's happening. And what I'm doing is I'm having rallies, I'm having open mics, I'm having interviews, and I'm focusing on that.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Nicola, sorry.
I was going to ask, what would you say to people who are in the closet and afraid to come out?
I would tell them, come out slowly if you want. If you want to come out, there are lots of therapists out there like me. There are lots of support groups. And come out slowly if that's what you want. There isn't anyone rushing you.
That's wonderful. I have a question for you. What do you think about the existence of coexisting, what if insofar as that we are psychologically variant in any way? When you don't deal with your emotional issues and when you feel that you are rejected by family, society, and marginalized, so that you live in a sense in a kind of an interior pressure cooker, particularly when you're growing up, because these aren't the things you feel comfortable talking about, even with your closest friends. When that happens to you, is it surprising that we develop other types of things such as substance abuse and anxiety disorders and depression and many other things that then are thrown back at us and saying, and they say to us, well, it's really these other disorders that are your real thing. What you call gender dysphoria is just your general maladaptation in other areas. And if we could just get you straightened out on those, all the gender feelings would go away because you have a faulty idea of gender, forgetting that gender may be the more inclusive term, that who we are as gendered people has so much to say about how we relate to the world in every aspect of our lives.
Yes. I'm really with you on that. And I think the more that we're visible, the more people will be able to say, oh, I know a trans person, and they're a lot like how I am. That's exactly what I want. And that's why I want to be visible.
That was certainly the approach that Harvey Milk advocated for gay people.
Yes,
he said, unless you come out, people will never know how many people we're really talking about. Whereas in the days when we were coming up, the idea was that's why it had so much spectacular media attention. When Christine Jorgensen came back from Denmark, it was almost like being mobbed at the airport as though she'd come from, you know, from Mars or something. And as if she was the only one. And actually, in some ways, that made her career for her. It gave her a platform that she would otherwise never have had. But the problem of an everyday trans person is that we're on the downside of that mountain right now, where what the society is saying, we not only want you invisible, but we want to undercut any progress you made in terms of having some sort of official recognition. We would like to portray you as not only solitary, but your whole quote community should not exist. You don't have a right to have a community built around an aberration. And that is where they really attack us, because they say you're not only weird, you're bad.
Yes, yes. It's exactly what they're saying. And it's up to us to resist that and to say, I'm just like you are. I'm visible just because I want to be myself. Like everybody wants to be themselves. That's exactly why I'm visible.
Now, what do you make of this thing where they say it isn't that you're have feminine behaviors that's our problem, is that you want to be included in the most intimate physiological spaces and being treated as, quote, women, biological women, as if being biologically female is some sort of an achievement. And then if you're trying to grab some of that, it's like you need to pay with your menstruation or your child pain or something like that, or you're not really a female. And so it's this almost a sense that we're not only moving into spaces where we don't belong, but that we're claiming a status of courtesy that we don't deserve.
I know that that's what a lot of people say. And that's why I say I just want to be me. I just want to be what I am. And if you don't like it, it's okay. I'm me.
And that also implies that there's so many different ways of being trans. Not every trans person is going to be a pageant queen any more than everyday females that we run into in our daily life manifest the same appearance or anything else. The one irreducible thing that they always seem to come back to, though, is this whole idea of a woman being able to be the recipient of a male penis in the vagina. If you can't at least do that, and or better still, if you can't get pregnant, then somehow or other you're less of a woman. And some of that even goes to everyday, what I would call genetic females, because what we notice with them is that when you're past a certain age, the way Lauren Hutton, the model, put it, she said, when you're out of eggs, you're out of business.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and I can say, as somebody who, you know, has ovaries and eggs and a vagina and all that, it's not really that special. Okay. We need to stop making a big deal about it.
Well, you could always open a roadside egg stand on the side of the road there, and
hey, if I'm not going to use them, someone else might as well take them.
But you know, this is how we fetishize sex in general, and that's the other victimization of trans people, where they take the anger that some men feel towards women. This is why we often end up victims of sexual attacks, and why we have the other side of visibility, which is the Transgender Day of Remembrance, because what happens is they say, we resent, we feel that we can do to you what we would like to do to women in general, because somehow or other, you know, so like we're the scapegoat for their desire.
Right. Right. Hey, it's getting a little late here, and I'm getting a little tired.
Okay, great. Yeah, let's wrap it up. We've been talking today with Rachel Crandall Crocker, the founder of Transgender Day of Visibility. Rachel, if people would like to learn more about Trans Day of Visibility, is there a website or something they can go to?
I encourage them to go to the Transgender Michigan website.
Great, and that's a good place to go and learn about it.
Yeah, and we have all sorts of resources on it.
Great. Well, Rachel, it's just as it's been a real honor talking to you. You're a real hero in, you know, in our transgender community, and we just thank you so much for, you know, making making this special day for all of us.
Thank you.
Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
Where do you see the future? Because we're definitely in a crossroads, and as I've always tried to remind people, we're not the only targets of the current movement of recalcitrant conservatism in America. But do you see us going back into more privatizing our lives, where we kind of say, except for the necessity of at least appearing in public, I'm not going back in the closet, but is there a way that we can find a way, if we are going through a dark period, how do we defend ourselves against these projections and against these accusations and against actual violence towards us? What can we do to prevent that?
What I do is that I take action. I plan rallies. I have open mics. We have transgender job fairs. I focus on what I'm doing about it. And we all can. We can help to elect.
Well, that's a great people. Way to close the show.
Yeah. We could help to elect people who believe in diversity. That's exactly what I'm doing, and I encourage us all.
I think that's exactly what needs to be done. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, everyone. Nicola, would you like to close the show?
Sure. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Radio. We were joined tonight by Rachel Crandall Crocker talking about the Transgender Day of Visibility here on March 31st. So, happy Trans Day of Visibility, everyone. And thank you. Have a good night.
Good night.
Night.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks,
McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing forward discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Friend any place I land.
gonna fire up the air. Blues overtakes, we're gonna rock away from here. Now my love has been refused. Now I've got the don't care blues.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Bedroom surprise. They call it climbing and I call it visibility. They call it coolness and I call it visibility. They call it way too rowdy. I call it finally free.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification